our
that point.
brilliance to the rest of the world, because I'm telling you, they need our brilliance now more than ever before. That's all I could say. So we'll get started. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody in the sound of my voice, and those that are watching me live streaming to YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, you know it, wherever it is. That's where we are. We are everywhere. We are everywhere, which is really cool. And welcome everybody to the panel. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Just remember, everything you hear today, by the way, is an opinion. So do your own research. That's all I could say, is make sure you do your own research. So you, if whatever we say is bullshit, you can catch us on it. There you go. And I'm sure there'll be plenty of bullshit today. You know, that's what I like about it. You know, it's like, we'll say whatever we want. And then, well, you know, whatever it is, that's where we'll go. That's where we'll go. And welcome, welcome, welcome. So I hope everybody had a great week. I hope everybody had a phenomenal week. I know I did. And Valentine's Day, I'm already past Valentine's Day. And I loved it. I loved it. Bo and I had a great time. We went to a wedding. We went to a wedding.
Nice.
Our friends got married. And if you follow us on Facebook, then you will see the pictures of the wedding. Very, very cool. They had a party in their backyard. Just a wonderful time. What are your plans for Valentine's Day? Or are you guys just, this is it. This is it. I am your Valentine.
I'm alone in a hotel room in the middle of nowhere, Texas. So I'll be on the phone. Having an intimate phone conversation is the best I get.
Welcome to the Hotel California. You know, that's it. That's
or
what you're
Hotel
doing, right, Dave?
California/Texas.
Out here with Hotel California in Crockett, Texas.
Kenny might pop in. Barry is rehearsing today, so he might be in a little room. Hi, Kurt. Happy Valentine's Day. I'm surprised there's no more. I'm surprised you're not in a field of hearts. But is that are those hearts of corn? I don't know. I can't tell from here.
Greg and I are starting a new co-op farm.
Yeah. Mine's in the Himalayas, so and yours is in the Great Plains. So this is rice, so.
Oh. Yeah. Okay, I'll try harder.
Well, all
no,
right. I'm going to try you to.
Diversify.
I'm going to try to get you to think hard. Okay, so this year on February 9th, it was the 60th anniversary of the Ed Sullivan Show, where the Beatles performed for the first time in the United States on television. And of course, it launched their career. Did anybody see that video? Nobody?
Yeah, I saw that.
Oh, I've seen that. Done. Yeah, I think everybody.
No, they artificially intelligized it. So that, the sound is phenomenal, clear as a bell, and as well as the images seem to be restored, even though it isn't black and white. It's just amazing to look at.
Amazing,
you know, yeah, the interesting thing is that Paul McCartney, and looking back at it, he did most of the lead vocals of that performance.
I thought what was interesting is just how it sounded for so few mics.
Yeah, it didn't even look like they mic'd the drums.
No, it was just overhead.
Were you there at the theater, the Ed Sullivan Theater?
No.
At the time, Greg? No.
No.
How
my elder
I
brother,
was...
my elder brother wanted to go, but I was living in Hartford, Connecticut, and that was the big family argument that week, because he actually got tickets, and but yep, he wasn't allowed to. Parents said, "Nope, you're not going to go with those long haired, whatever," you know.
You know, everybody. It was like a big event at that time for us. You know, I was 12 or 13, I believe. At the time, I think I was 12, so I'm not good with math. I figured it out earlier, and I can't remember now, so I guess I'm not good with memory either. But What I do, my memory of it was, is I was really excited about seeing all my friends. Everybody was talking about it. And my parents wanted to punish me for whatever reason, because I'm sure I was one of the best kids ever, you know. I never did anything wrong. But their punishment was that I couldn't watch the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show.
That's so funny, because Myrna's parents did the same thing to her, and she didn't forgive them forever because they did that to her. She wasn't allowed to watch it either. I have to tell her about you. You two can commiserate with each other.
Well, I did something different. My memory is that I went into the living room anyway, turned on the TV and watched it. And, you know, that's all over to it. I remember seeing it, but it changed my life forever. That was when I knew that I wanted to be a musician. I knew that at that moment in time that I wanted to play guitar and play piano. And I remember, I didn't have a good childhood. Let's put it this way. And that probably shows right now on me. But I remember that, you know, we had a piano in the living room, and I was taking piano lessons, but I didn't want to learn what they were teaching me. I wanted to learn Beatle music. So I tried figuring it out myself. And the first song that I learned was, I think, Obla Di Obla Da. You know, I think that was the first song that I learned. I can't remember whatever it was. And I was playing it, and my sister came back into the house. And she thought it was the radio. And then when my mother came back and heard me playing it, she said to me, either you play what your teacher says or you're banned from playing the piano. She was an asshole. I mean, I'll tell you right now, you know, in those days, she didn't want any kid. And the worst part about it was she wasn't really even my mother either. So it was my aunt. My parents had died when I was younger, when I was 4 years old, and I was taken in by my aunt and uncle, who really didn't need any more kids as it was. They already had two kids that they had ruined their lives, and they were determined to ruin my life as well. But of course, you know, they say that the most important years of a person's life is between 1 and 4 years old, is when you learn who you are, or you start to become who you are at that point in time. And I had an abundance of love in that part of my life. And so it pulled me through. And I knew the difference between right and wrong, no matter what they were telling me. I always believed that I knew the difference of what it was. And I had other people that would validate that I was in the right. But anyway, my experience of the Beatles, and it changed my whole entire life. And this is probably more information than you need, that's for sure. But what the hell?
Soon after Ed Sullivan Show is when I went to see them at Forest Hills. It was that trip here that they played.
Hey, David.
You went to see them at Forest Hills?
Yeah. I took my sister.
I think you have a 10 dB pad on your bike.
Me?
Yeah. Anybody else think he's low?
Yes, I agree. Jan is much louder than he is.
Well, that Jan is always much louder than everybody. What the hell? You know, that's why he's Jan.
It is low, David.
All right, let's see what I can do about that.
Yeah, I remember. I saw him just Googling here.
Is that better? One, two, hello?
Yeah, there you go.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, much better, yeah, much better.
More? Is that better than that?
No,
that's good.
Bring it down?
No, yeah, down a little. You're bringing up the background noise.
Okay. There we go. Anyway,
he must be gain sharing with the monitor guy.
Well, I have to go pick up my dinner. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Tell us the Beatles story before you leave.
Oh, well, it was Forest Hills, and I was eight. I was just 18 because I could drive in New York City. You couldn't drive in New York City at 17. You had to be 18. So let's see. It had to be after May, so it had to be a couple of months after they came back and did it. But I saw them that within a few months of the Ed Sullivan Show, and it was great. It was Ike and Tina Turner, opening act, and Jackie DeShannon and the Isley Brothers were the three opening acts for that show, and they all had to be delivered by helicopter, which was like really cool because that was back, you know, in the early '60s. And it was Forest Hills is a tennis stadium. So it was in the shape of a U with an open back. And the open back is where the stage was. And nobody was allowed to sit on the grass because it's a grass tennis stadium. So it was a U-shaped crowd of girls screaming And the ones on the far right saw the helicopter first coming from to the side. So the screams just came around in a long U. I heard it come, it was like a wave, except it was screams. And it was great. It was a great show. I could actually hear them in between the screams. And it was fun. I saw the Beatles.
And how did it affect your life in the long run?
I just loved music. It didn't change my life at all. It was just, I got to see the Beatles. It's like Woodstock. Woodstock didn't change my life. It just made it better. That's all.
Right. Right. I agree with that completely. No, when I saw the Beatles, that's when I knew I had to play music. Yeah. I knew music was in my blood at that point in time. And it brought out, you know, it brought out so many good things in my life, you know, yeah. Including my hair. My hair started to get long, you know.
Well, I had already played piano for a few bunch of years before I saw those guys. So I was already into music then. And dancing. Dancing was a big part of my life. My parents were dancing, ballroom dancing. So any kind of, you know, music of any kind was fun. And it was in my life back then.
So. Well, I remember watching the TV show Dancing with the Danskys. I thought it was a good one. I thought it was a great show. You know, I'm sorry it went off the air. But anyway, go get your dinner and then come back. And we're going to talk about something in your honor. We're going to talk about Track Dot.
Oh yeah, Track Dot. Okay.
Come on back. Come on back, folks. Don't miss this episode. This is going to be something you'll love forever. Anyway, so Greg, where were you when the Beatles were there?
In Hartford, Connecticut.
Right.
I was, I can't remember how old I was. I wasn't in high school. I think I was still in elementary school. So, no, maybe I was in junior high school. I can't remember. But
You got a picture of the Hills. Maybe you were as old as the Hills in those days. Yeah. Who knows?
No,
but anyway, so how did it affect your life? Did it affect your life? Is there any stories you have? I mean, in life.
Not so much there. I mean, it was just a different part of music. I was a cellist at that point. And I was a cellist up until I was started in the business. I went to Ohio State on a music scholarship. And so... I was playing a cello there, and then I needed money, so I got a part-time job. I applied for a part-time job at this place called the Columbus Agora, and I was hired by Hank Locani himself. And first night I was there, it was B.B. King. And I mixed B.B. King my very first night ever, you know, behind him, buying an old Longfin LA-1 mixing console. So
I remember the console.
My very first gig with my first Meyer rig was B.B. King.
Oh, yeah. He's great. Isn't he a great guy?
Oh, yeah. I'd seen him a bunch of times. I'm a huge fan.
Yeah. Yeah. He's really good. I've seen him too. So, yeah, I dropped out of the music program and put my cello away. My parents didn't speak to me for quite some time. And I started working at the Columbus Agora full time. That was 1972.
So now think about it like
one?
This.
Huh?
Do you still have one?
I was thinking about getting one. But then all these other projects came up. No, but I tell you what, when I see
something
people
tells
on there,
me,
I'm
Greg,
doing the figuring.
Greg, something tells me that sometime this week you're going to see a picture of your head on Yo-Yo Ma somewhere. Thanks to our
now,
punk
why
artist.
Would you,
in
why
the
would you say that?
So yeah, I tell you the I always had, you know, throughout the years I always had, boy, wouldn't it be great to have a, you know, a rock and roll cellist, and then here come the two cellos, you know. Have you guys ever seen that band? They're great.
Very good. You know? Also, yeah, I like the band Bond. The four girls, they are amazing. If you haven't seen them, they're really, really good and fun to watch too.
You could have been in ELO.
Yeah. I did it. I did the Flying Hamburger Tour in the US. No, thank you. That band was Jeff Lynne was at that time. Yeah. I had, his first American tour was interesting. Let's just put it that way. So,
sure, there was a lot of debauchery going on, but don't quote me on that.
No. Actually, it wasn't that. It was just, he thought he was bigger than he was, you know, and, when festival season came out, came around, he kind of, had a rude awakening, you know.
Well,
so.
Anyway, just thinking about going back to just focus your mind a little bit. Just think, you saw the Ed Sullivan Show back, 60 years ago. Did you ever imagine that you would be flying on a plane sitting next to Paul McCartney?
Nope. Never.
And there you were, flying. Yeah. Where were you flying?
I was flying from Narita to. I've sat with him twice. So, once domestically, and once internationally. So, it was. You know, you just gotta. They're people too. And, you know, they're flying in the same aluminum tube you are. So,
But you breathe the air, the same air as Paul McCartney. I have to tell you, next time I see you, Greg, I'm going to ask for an autograph. That's all I can say.
Well, I tell you what, he was hanging out with Taylor in Las Vegas last week. So in her studio. So, I mean, in her suite. So there you go.
There you go, man. Well, we'll get to that in a minute. We'll get to that, but let's finish the Beatles thing. So, Chris, where were you when you heard the Beatles? Were you born, right?
Yeah. So I was a bit young for that one, but I was just noticing. You know, I couldn't. I was Googling while you guys were talking. I believe that drum set was sold recently. The one that he played on the Ed Sullivan set. And I'm just looking at a picture because the first drum kit I ever got it would have been 1970, 71, was a, Ludwig, one tom up. They had a little bracket on the snare drum for a ride cymbal. The Ludwig, the famous Speed King bass pedal and hi-hat pedal. But the biggest thing for the Beatles for me was Ringo's influence on my drumming. It's really strange. I mean, I really, really loved the Beatles, and I never got into the Stones until much later. And then the other huge influence, if you can believe this, when I was like, when did Led Zeppelin II come out? Anybody know that off the top of their head? I think it was in the
73.
Yeah. So that was, I mean, when I heard, Ringo playing with the Beatles, I was just blown away. Abbey Road and all of that. But then I was listening to John Bonham, even at like a really young age, and just, I was kind of thinking back about that a couple of months ago, and I was like, yeah, Bonham really influenced my playing much more than I was kind of like previously giving him credit. But, the whole lot of love and that stuff, which is kind of interesting because I'm actually going back and playing that stuff now. I haven't played it in years. And it was, what an amazing thing, to have that. I still have the cymbals from that kit, but I don't have the I sold it, which was dumb. I mean, that thing would be worth a mint today. But you know, that's the way it goes.
Well, that's it. So it didn't. So it just influenced the way you play drums, but it didn't influence you into getting to play the drums.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think that I was kind of, you know, my father was heavily against television, kind of as a general thing. So he listened. That's the one thing I will give him credit for not liking the television. He used to call it the boob tube, and I think he had a point there. But the one thing that he did do was to give us, I don't know if you guys remember this, but, you know, like back in the days, turntables were sometimes incorporated into a piece of furniture.
I don't know. Absolutely.
If you remember, yeah, like having this thing.
So we're TVs.
We had a wooden piece of furniture, and this thing would lift up, and underneath it was a turntable. I think there was even a small reel to reel and an AM tuner. I don't even know if they had FM at that time. But my father had all of these salsa. He had a factory in Mexico, so he was heavily into jazz and salsa. So I was listening to Bossa Nova, the group, you know, Sao Yu Pa, and some of these songs back in the early late 60s, early 70s. I was listening to Brazilian jazz, and so that's how I started out. I was all jazz fusion, and then eventually moved on. But my father's musical influence had a big influence on me. But he was very, very much into jazz. He was big jazz.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. Kurt, what about you? How did the Beatles? I see you still have the marquee there from the Ed Sullivan Theater put in your house. So they must have really affected you.
I think I was two New Year's Eve parties away from being conceived.
Oh, there you go.
I'm a huge Beatles fan, though. Big McCartney fan. I studied it all my life. The first song I ever remember learning how to sing was actually Here Comes the Sun. Here Comes the Sun off Abbey Road, George Harrison.
George Harrison song.
Yeah, that album blew my mind. And then if you remember back in the day, there was the big rumor that McCartney was dead because he was the only one in bare feet.
Yeah, there's all that stuff.
You remember there was all of this whole thing about how McCartney had died and Lennon was the doctor and McCartney was the corpse and oh man.
The whole line, the walrus thing, the walrus is Paul, all that stuff. There's all that stuff. I'll tell you
I had a friend that used to think that the Beatles were part of the devil because that you would always hear wherever you went, no matter where it was, every day you'd hear a Beatles song. And he felt that because you'd hear it every day, that it was, you know, that these guys had to be, you know, part of the devil worship thing, you know, of course. And then they started playing the music backwards, which is crazy.
Number nine.
The vocal Paul does on Golden Slumbers is still one of the all-time greatest rock vocals ever.
I'm going to make a note of that one and go listen to it.
It's really good. I love it.
He made a point of tracking it in the morning, and he didn't say a word or speak to anyone. He got in the car without saying a word. He never spoke a word to anybody. He drove to the studio on purpose so that when he sang the track, he would have that raspy first voice of the morning kind of thing. And you listen to that track, it's pretty stunning.
Is it on Revolver or what album is it?
No, the very last track on Abbey Road.
Well, it's the very last track.
Golden Slumbers.
It's just easy to find. Just Google it in there. You'll find it. Tina's in the room as well. So I'll ask Tina here if she has any recollection of the Beatles but I know she wasn't around at the day.
No.
The Ed Sullivan Show was happening.
I don't know anything about it.
Is it possible your parents?
I say, you know what influenced me was the Sugar Harold Gang. the Sugar Hill Gang. That's when my music influences started. Well, I don't know if you like rap music, but that's what happened to me.
Well, there you go. And that explains a lot. I'll tell you that right now, you know.
Hey, anyway. Kurt, I got to tell you, that was a really good look. You walking to the back of the room.
I know, totally. Like you it looked like you walked out of the theater. That was amazing.
Oh, it did?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Catch that. Hating myself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you keep going. The perspective is perfect. It looks like you're walking right out of the marquee.
Oh, man, that is cool. That is cool. That is very, very cool.
Well,
yeah, that is.
And it's welcome, Ed Sullivan. Thank you so much for coming today.
You know, apparently, I've been on CNN a lot lately, too. But that's another story.
Yeah. So speaking about television, the things we saw on television, the big story is, of course, Jon Stewart is back on the air. Did anybody get to see Jon Stewart? He was hilarious. I mean, super hilarious. And not only is he hilarious, I noticed that every news show I watched had a little snippet of what he had done on Monday night. And it was just very funny.
So how does Trevor Noah feel about that? It's like,
I don't think Trevor Noah cares.
Trevor Noah's doing he's doing the Oscars anyway, so didn't he? So
that's he just did the Grammys.
No,
I don't think Trevor Noah has a care in the world. Don't know. We can make it up though. So anyway, then the other thing was the Super Bowl, and so anybody have any comments on the Super Bowl? Great game. Absolutely great game.
Well, I got to tell you.
I'm shocked that they pulled it off and got a TD. I mean, I really thought San Francisco was going to win that game. I was completely blown away.
You know, that's the same thing as life. You could razzle-dazzle all you want. You could razzle-dazzle all you want. But until you get over the goal line, it's just razzle-dazzle. The only thing that really counts is getting over that goal line, you know?
It was a good game. You know, I watched it. Halftime, got a lot of comments about halftime, but...
I was on a phone call, so I didn't get to see Usher, but I heard it was mixed.
Well, if you're a fan of that type of music, it was great because he had so many different people on as his guest. Tina, what do you think of it? Because it's more of Tina's genre than anyone else's.
Oh, I loved it. I just thought that he had to crunch, you know, 30 years of music into 13 minutes. And I thought he did a great job.
Yeah, I mean, it was a nice show. I tell you one thing I saw, I thought for sure that stage was going to collapse. It was flexing at least. When they were all jumping up and down, it was flexing at least 4 inches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought the same thing. I couldn't believe it. They had too much weight on that stage, is what I thought. They had too much weight on that stage.
Well, they had 20 people on the stage, and they're all jumping up and down at the same time, you know, at one point in the show. And I looked down at that stage, and it's like a whoop-a, whoop-a, whoop-a. And I'm like going, yep, Soundbreaker's going to get a call on Monday morning saying, hey.
Did you sell us that stage? You know? One thing I will say about the halftime is I thought that the production value, I mean, the quality of sound that came off the tube was pretty good. I mean, I think that they really had that down. Usually they have to work on adjusting the volume and the quality of the sound. And sometimes you can't even hear things, but this time I thought it was really well mixed. Very good show.
Usher in the beginning, his mic was something wrong.
That headpiece mic.
The headpiece, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, they switched him to, and that was unplanned to switch him to a handheld. He wanted to do the headpiece the entire show.
Because he dances.
Yeah.
I was talking to one guy at the Meyer demo. Listen to this. So I forget what band it is, but they were playing with Panther, and somebody forgot to bring the subs up, and they played like three or four songs with just the array with no subs, and people really didn't notice.
Yep.
That's amazing.
You heard them when they ran it at the demo and they had the subs off. You could easily do a show without subs with that box.
Oh, God.
It's a reasonable like country show or something. No problem.
Yeah. Oh, no, I agree. And the first Meyer demo at the East Side Church in Anaheim, that the acoustics in that place were amazing. And apparently it's this guy, Chris Gilly or whatever, that was at Meyer that did the acoustics in the East Side Church. The second one at the Grove, the acoustics were really quite awful. I mean, the room was really bouncy. But
yeah, it still sounded good.
But they,
you know, I'll tell you a story about Meyer.
They had crazy. They had, what was it, Kurt? I think they had six. Yeah, they had six 2100s in an Enfire, three deep, two high.
Per side, yeah.
On each side. And then they had, I think they had nine or 10.
10.
Yeah, they had 10, 10 elements in the array. And it was just absolutely mind-blowing. I mean, nothing short of mind-blowing, just crazy loud. And they even had a drummer. They had a drummer up on the stage and they had mic'd his kick drum. And of course, it sounded like a 21-inch gun when he hit the kick drum. It was absolutely mind-blowing.
How about that kazoo solo at the end?
The what, sorry?
Kazoo solo he played at the end.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everything was just, I mean, that stuff's crazy. And so I got another email from Meyer. They're having a training course down in Irvine. So I signed up for that. They're doing a two-day deal with, you know, basically Panther and the 2100 and array design using MAP and other stuff. So it'll be fun. I haven't dabbled in that, so it should be a good time.
Is that Magoo teaching it?
It's two people. One's male, the other is female. Let me get the mailing here. But yeah, that looks like fun. Oh, a quick question for you, Kurt. I just ordered cases for these from Get Off My Case for my Meyer stuff. Dumb question, but what about color? Is that even something I need to even think about, or well, is it just a non-issue?
It's a non-issue.
All right, color depends on what other cases you have.
Yeah.
If you have, you know, you don't want to have a mismatch of cases. So if you have black cases, you don't want to have black, blue, and red cases. You would prefer to have all matching colors.
Well, yeah, I've got a shit ton of SKB, so I'll probably just get black. Although they've got this kind of lime green that looks pretty fun.
When we color code some of our stuff, like we have a lot of matching work boxes, they're all the same. So like my personal one's blue and there's another one that's red and there's one that's black and there's one that's gray, you know, so you know from a distance when the stuff rolls off the truck, if they all look the same, like most of our power.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah.
Our power distribution racks are red. So they don't get pushed to the wrong end of the arena or theater or something. And so when it comes off, everyone can tell what that is. So most of the stuff is black, but we do color code specific things so that we can see them, you know, from 50 feet away and tell point to where it goes.
Makes sense.
Very cool. Very cool.
If you buy pink ones or brown ones, they won't get stolen.
Yeah, they offer pink, but that's kind of like not my thing. But one of the finishes that I thought was kind of interesting was just wood. They actually they use a very good quality plywood, and they have several, you know, a bunch of folks have just ordered the cases with a wood with a satin finish on it.
Yeah, that's not bad. We've got a lot.
Back in the 70s, when the dead were, you know, primed out, they didn't give numbers on their cases. They all had names.
Mm-hmm.
Say, bring Claire over here and put Frank over there, and whatever the names were, every case had a name, no numbers. Real Grateful Dead stuff.
That must have been really a lot of fun on the right on the gear manifest list when they would go overseas, you know.
Yeah,
or even just calling out to do a truckload, you know, when you're at the edge of the truck, you know, give me Sophia, you know.
Yeah, yeah, I'd like Sophia too myself. Yeah, yeah. Give it.
They used to use different types of hardwood on the different racks depending on what was in it. That was an ultrasound thing, though. Actually,
So the Meyer, the Meyer instructors are Mauricio Magu Ramirez, who's and then somebody else, Constantina Daras.
I don't know her. Magu is awesome. He's a great systems guy, and he'll know MAP inside and out. You'll learn a lot about all pass filters and a bunch of cool stuff. First day will be a lot of review. Second day will be a lot of new territory.
There you go.
Totally worth it.
Speaking of road cases, I have a question for you. Do you put trackers in your road cases?
I'm about to put one in my new smart rig since my last rig got stolen.
After the last one,
I'm going to go into the back of the foam and cut a little slit and put it in there. I just put them in my trucks too because I've had a little history with that. So my trucks have them hidden and my new smart rig will have it hidden. And I might put one in the in-ear and the wireless racks just because those are high ticket. You know, they're relatively easy to steal. Nobody's going to steal a giant trunk full of feeder.
Right.
You know, but yeah, they can steal a wireless rack or in-ear rack or a whole truck.
There's an excellent tracker for this stuff. It's called the Spot Tracker. Don't know if you've heard of that. SPOT. It's a small asset tracking device. It's probably this is like a stack of credit cards. It's probably slightly smaller than this. And and I've got one hidden in my car, but you can put them anywhere, and you can either put lithium batteries in there that last anywhere from 3 to 6 months, depending on how much the object moves. Because as soon as it starts moving or vibrates, it starts pinging the satellite. And really good accuracy, and they're not terribly expensive, and it's a good tracker. Although obviously air tags are quite good, just simply given how many people, you know, are carrying iPhones.
You get up to 150 on one Apple ID. So
yeah, I love
you
the
AirTag. Share them now. Now you could share it. But here, this is the, you know, that this is the AirTag. But what's really cool is there's a company that makes these little boxes right here. They screw off. Gosh, they screw off. I'll put the link up. This could be from my Amazon affiliate account, but it screws off, and it has a plastic ring that goes around the AirTag, and it has the 3M tape, and it sticks to anything, and they become very, very small, and because they're black, they're hard to see, and the AirTags are an amazing device, you know, if you have one, it's definitely the way to go as far as tracking. But there was a company before the AirTag, there was a company that David and I found out about called TrackDot. You remember, David? I don't remember how we heard about it. I think it was at CES.
I found them at the CES show.
Yeah, we found them at CES. And basically, it was the first tracker that was there. That was a great idea. It used
2G. That's what it used. 2G.
You don't even you can even use LTE. I mean, the amount of bandwidth to basically send your position out is like this long. I mean, it's really small. Basically, it's a GPS coordinate, and they just pop those GPS coordinates, so they don't need any kind of significant speed or anything. And a lot of these asset trackers are using kind of low cost networks to give you real time data about the position of the tracker.
Well, they use near field on Apple tags, near field Bluetooth.
It's near field and Bluetooth. They're a little bit, you know, if you really are getting somebody who's going to be a jerk, they're kind of not that hard to find. an air tag.
All you need is a little zipper.
Yeah. These little spot trackers are pretty good because all they only speak the frequency to the satellite. There's no other RF coming off it. So they transmit extremely well through fiberglass or plastic. So you can basically take one of these asset trackers and get it anywhere under the dashboard of your car facing up, and it works.
Yeah, well, I have one in my, I have these in my, on my motorbike. I have it in my car. I have it in my suitcases. I have them, you know, everywhere. I have them on my keys. I have one in my wallet. You know, I mean, they really, they're amazing, actually. They work very, very well, almost a little too well.
They had issues where I think there was some famous actress, somebody managed to slip an air tag into her coat, and that was kind of like what brought air tags way out in the public is that she had an iPhone, somebody slipped an air tag into her coat to follow her, and her phone eventually notified her that wherever she went, a foreign air tag was always following her. And if you do that long enough with an air tag, it'll pop a message up on your phone saying, hey, there's an air tag in your presence. That's not yours.
It took a couple iOS updates, though.
Yes.
For that to come to pass.
You bet.
Yeah.
But anyway, the whole thing is that the whole thing about this in the case is, it's a really inexpensive way. What, they're less than $25 a piece. But the thing is that there was this thing called the TrackDot that David and I, that was designed to put in your luggage. And David and I bought them and they were great. And then all of a sudden, one day we get a notice that they no longer can use 2G anymore. And they were garbage. They became garbage, instantaneous garbage. Well, now a company bought them out and they're called Gecko GPS Improved Technology. And if you owned a track that they're offering you now 30% off. But the problem is what good are they? Why would I need one of those when the AirTags seem to have replaced it?
Yeah, the only convenient thing about an AirTag is that it doesn't, sorry, the only convenient thing about a true GPS asset tracker is that it doesn't need an iPhone anywhere in the vicinity, and you can if you pay for a higher SLA, service level agreement, you can get more frequent pings to find out, you know, where the asset is and that kind of stuff. But
they sound way better and the workflow is easier to understand.
Yeah.
I was waiting for Greg.
But if you buy your AirTags from Apple, they'll engrave them for you.
Yeah.
Free. Yes. Right, on the right up on the store. Yeah, it's fantastic.
That's right. So somebody who sees it, who stole your stuff, now I know who I stole it from. You know, there you go. It's it.
Yep, and they get tossed in the canal in Bangkok, you know.
Well, they just take the battery out. You know, that's it. That's the end of the story. You know, but there's some really great stories of how people that you have used Find My iPhone or Find My iPad, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Find my AirTag, you know. It's
you want to hear a really funny story about tech inserting itself into somebody's private life. So some guy, there was an article about this in one of the tech journals, got busted for having an affair. How did the wife find out? Because he was wearing his iWatch. Well, what would that have to do with it? Well, it turns out that like 2 o'clock in the morning, this guy's heart rate went up to like 120 for a half an hour. And the wife is looking through his heart data. And like, you know, what's going on there? And he got busted. I mean, she busted him big time.
Well, at that rate, I'm sure basically now she's farming him out, you know, as a stud farm. You know, there you go.
That's pretty amazing.
You know? Anyway, hey, has anybody heard anything, you know, speaking of all that, you know, a health thing, has anybody heard about if any outcome on Elon Musk's Neuralink.
Haven't heard
squat. Now, other than they're going, you know, anything medical takes years and years and years. This, they've been working on that for years, and they published, you know, they had a milestone, and they published their milestone. So now it's just years and years and years more research and work. And
but it's, know, in somebody's brain. He put it in somebody's, yeah, brain. Yeah. I'm just waiting to hear what, you know, what happened with that. But you know what? So my Elon Musk, Jan, was up for a big. Jan,
yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt you. My point, Jan, is it's going to be another year and a half, maybe 2 years before you hear something more about that.
Yeah. Well, the reason I brought it up is because he moved his company to Las Vegas, because basically what happened was, is that a Delaware judge invalidated his pay raise. He had a pay deal with Tesla, and they wouldn't let it. I mean, it was like $50 million or something like that.
Billion. So billion, what? Would it be? Yeah. $50 billion. That's all stock and options. Yeah.
Yeah. And they said, hey, you ain't getting that kind of money. That's not fair.
Yeah. So he moved it to Las Vegas. He moved it to Nevada Incorporation.
I thought he was going to Texas. That's what it is.
No, he moved it to Nevada. It was just with the links in the show notes if you want to read about it. You know. So also, speaking of technology, Greg, you were talking to me. When were you talking to me about the Apple Pro, that vision thing? Was it last week?
Yeah, it was last week. I went down to the Apple store here, and I booked an appointment. I highly recommend, you know, if you have an Apple store, you would have to go to Bangkok, Jan. But if anybody, you can book an appointment at your local Apple stores if they have them for. A demo. You get 15 minutes with it, and with a guy, you know, with an Apple guy there, and it's definitely well worth it.
So you remember what I said about that, you know, about watching porn on it, right? That would be like the cool thing, you know. You can imagine how the porn industry has revolutionized everything that we know about today, VCR, you know, DVDs, that kind of stuff.
The internet.
You guys know what a life hacker is? Life hacker? Cool newsletter that goes out, lifehacker.com, if you've never heard about it. Anyway, out of the box, they had an article, and it says that Apple Vision won't play VR and AR porn. They've blocked the way so you can watch porn on this headset. Give it to Tim Cook, man. Power to the people. So, of course, people have already figured out a way around it. So,
well, yeah, I mean, that's
life hacker.
That's, you know, that's kind of like getting into fair use arguments. You know, if you bought it and you can't use it to play a certain kind of video, is that fair use? I don't know.
It has to do with the formats used.
Okay.
You know, like it's like saying I don't want to play AMR files, but I'll play WAV files.
Okay. So it's just, yeah. I mean, Apple didn't support FLAC for years. You know, they had ALAC, right? They had their own compression algorithm, and they didn't want to use an open source one.
I wonder if I can get a PA that won't do EDM.
Good luck. Good luck with that. Good luck with that. Anyway, boys and girls and children of all ages, thanks for watching, and on YouTube and LinkedIn and Facebook. Give us a thumbs up if you like it. Even if you don't, give us a thumbs up, and remember to share the show with your friends or enemies, especially your enemies. They'll be thankful for it, you know, or they'll hate you for it, one of the way, but you're already their enemy, so who cares? You know, that's what I have to say. Anyway, I am off to Bangkok today, and I actually might go down to the Apple store and check out that Vision Pro. I think that would be a cool thing.
Yeah, you got to book an appointment. I mean, it will be there, but they won't allow you to touch it or anything. At least that was the rules here in Tampa. I don't know what they are, you know, what they, you know, but you definitely, it's very worthwhile to do it. And I'd love to see somebody do an interface to a desk.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. You know, Kurt will probably be the first one to do it.
Maybe
for some reason, I get the feeling that he would be one of, you know, that he would be capable of doing it. What do you think, Kurt?
I've thought of it before, actually. There's probably a way to port the display to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Apple will probably be a little bit more harder than some of the other, like the Microsoft augmented realities. They have they're more open source in their dev kits than Apple is.
Yeah, but then your reality will continually get updated without you knowing it.
That's with either one.
By the way, I was very surprised. Of course, this is the 40th anniversary. Dave, you might know this about the Apple commercial on Super Bowl.
1984.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That they did that famous ad. And I was surprised that I didn't see any ad from Apple on the Vision Pro on the Super Bowl.
No, there was one. Pre-show. They did one pre-show, maybe.
And they did the music, and they supported, they did the music portion of the Apple Presents, the music portion of the show.
Yeah, they did the halftime show, yeah.
Yeah, they did the halftime. And it was interesting that they had that disclaimer that it might want to make you dance and stuff like that. It was like a takeoff of, like this might cause cancer or something like that. But did anybody see any commercial that stood out in their mind?
Well, isn't it a disclaimer on the Taylor Swift movie?
Yeah.
I like the kid from Afro Nigeria who wanted to play football and found out that there was a football camp just for him. That was
pretty,
that was a good one.
Yeah. I like the Eminem commercial. That was the one I liked, the Eminem's.
I also liked the Mayo commercial where they had the cat, I like animals in commercials. So they had a cat commercial with Mayo. So,
Meow, meow.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, and no Super Bowl is complete unless you have the Clydesdales on, you know.
And yeah, some of the beer commercial was good. They used Messi as one of those commercials, on the beach. With Dan Marino.
How many of you remember the original Kennedy commercial?
He had an apology.
He got booed on that by the family, man. They poo-pooed on that. They made him give a public apology for doing that. Fortunately, I didn't see it, so I have no comment.
Yeah, one final thing about the halftime show. If you at the beginning of Alicia Keys' set, the very first note, she was a little bit pitchy. And then if you go back now and watch the YouTube replay of the halftime show, she's spot on. Yeah, they fixed it.
How do you like that piano? Yeah,
I heard that.
That was a great looking piano.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Now, well, there's something to be paid for. Imagine build a road case for that piano.
Dave Lawler, you guys know Dave Lawler? That's his side hustle is renting out Steinways.
Wow.
You want to hear that? So at the Meyer demo, one of the first tracks they played was Joshua Bell, this violinist, and I really kind of liked the track, so I went and bought the album and played it. And then I was really curious about his instruments. So you hear a lot about guys, you know, Clapton's guitar, Blackie, and how much that's worth. Do you know how much Bell's? I mean, you wouldn't want to drop his violin. Let's just put it that way. Anybody want to guess what his violin is worth?
Is it a Stradivarius?
It is.
Yeah.
That should start getting you into the right ballpark.
40
million. And not only is it a Stradivarius, it's considered to be one of the top three Stradivari known to exist. So the dude is playing with a $16 million axe. You better not drop it.
Wow. Now, David worked with Isaac Stern, right, Dave?
Yeah, yeah.
But didn't he have a an expensive a violin? And also, doesn't Charo have an original something or other
that she has a Ramirez guitar, which is one of the top classical guitar makers in the world. And she says she got it out of a museum. They gave it to her. I'm not so sure how true that is, but that's what she said. That's what she says. But Isaac Stern was playing klezmer music on his, I think he had a Stradivarius. He was playing klezmer music on a Stradivarius. That was different.
Can you imagine putting that in an overhead bin in an aircraft?
Objects may shift during flight or fall down.
Speaking of road cases, I'm sure he had a nice road case.
The guy in the seat next to you comes in and...
And we're talking about flights earlier. I was flying from Nice. It was a strange flight. I was flying from like Nice to Geneva. That's a short hop. You know, you just basically go over the Alps and you're there. And who was on the flight with me but Carlos Santana? And you know, his guy
pilot?
No. So they had the manager in front of me, and there's Carlos Santana and a couple of his guys. And so, you know, Santana's got his a soft case with his Paul Reed Smith in it. And the woman's, they can only speak English. And this woman is booking him in French. And she's like, oh, I'm terribly sorry, sir, but that guitar is just going to have to get checked. And they're kind of going back and forth in English and French. And so I just chimed in French. And I mean, you know, do you have the faintest idea who this gentleman is or what that guitar represents? She's like, no, I have no idea. So I told him, she's like, oh, well, I'm sure we can make an accommodation. And so the guy's like, thanks. Yeah, no problem. So he got, you know, he walked on the plane with his guitar. But yeah, they wanted to make him check his instrument in a soft case.
Oh. Now, isn't there a rule now in American Airlines, at least, that they have to, you cannot check your guitar, you can bring it on the plane?
You have to buy a seat.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean,
that sounds like bullshit to me. So basically, do your own research over there, folks.
I know people who have with cellos.
Yes. They buy their own seats.
They buy a seat for a cello.
Just tell them it's your emotional support cello.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another winner from Kurt. Absolutely. Just put like feathers on it. And when you open up the case, just say it's sleeping. And think sleepy. Can't wake it up.
Well, you guys are my emotional support. You are definitely my emotional support. Thanks for sticking with me and being part of my Wednesdays. I really appreciate it. Unfortunately, we're getting to a point where it's going to be daylight savings time again, and I'm going to have to wake up at 6 o'clock instead of 7 o'clock to be here. But I will. I guarantee you I will. So thanks for everything. Really appreciate it. We're going to stay in the room for a little while, but we're going to say goodbye to everybody on social media so we could really talk about those people. And so if you want to be part, DM anyone in the group and we'll send you a link. And remember, you make it happen. So stay safe and healthy. And remember to do your own research. And we will see you again next week for our 196th meeting of Thinking Out Loud with Friends, a discussion. Bye-bye now for now. And we will see you then again next week. And I will be back in Rawai, Thailand. Bye-bye. And we are off the air.